Connect. People. Potential. Technology.
With 15, he already founded his first venture, which he exited 3 years later. Tal Jampolsky was awarded the most innovative Air Force technology project and gained valuable leadership experience in the Israeli army. Later, Tal Jampolsky fulfilled different senior executive positions at major international banks. He then transitioned to Switzerland, where he took over an executive board role in a Swiss bank in addition to running a fintech company as a CEO. He now holds several board memberships with growth companies in the tech sector and supports them by giving strategic advice in the disruptive processes and scaling their businesses. Welcome to the show, Tal.
Thank you very much, Jakob. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, happy to have you here on the show. I would like to ask you a question. That's the question that I ask most of my guests is, what was your first exposure to the digital world? So if you go back maybe into your childhood, what do you remember there?
Of course, I remember the TV at home. But the real exposure I gained to the digital world and the potential of the digital world was when I was actually 12 years old. I was visiting a friend, and his sister was studying computer science. And she showed us a little bit of the things that she's doing with the PC at home, and I was fascinated. I saw all of these programs and the animations and the calculations. And I came back home, and I immediately told my parents, let's go, I want to get a book. And I got a book that's called QBasic. And this was actually my first exposure. And I came back home and I spent days and nights going through the book and experimenting with it and writing a lot of code.
Wow, that's fascinating. Now, you immigrated from Ukraine to Israel as a young kid, as a five-year-old. And I always find it interesting because myself as a child, we moved around a lot as children. So what was your... what did you learn from this experience, from being, immigrating from one country to the other?
Yeah, I was very young at the time, and it was my family who is immigrated, but the experience still stayed very vivid. I came across two kind of experiences. One experience is, of course, the integration need, where you feel immediately, even as a child, that there are certain other rules, other people, certain other behavior codes. And in order to fit in order to be part of the community, of the school, of the other kids, other families, you have to adjust quite quickly. The other thing, of course, our arrival to Israel was welcomed with a conflict at the time. I think it was the Gulf War. And my next very vivid memory is rockets flying above our house, and my mother kind of seals all the doors and all the windows because of the risk of chemical attacks. So yeah, we were sitting for some time with gas masks, which kind of combined this whole transition experience, on the social aspect, and also on the anxiety aspect and the level of kind of the different difficulties you can come across from coming into something new.
Mm-hmm. What else do you think did you learn also for your future life and maybe also your professional life?
So, as I mentioned, the integration part was very, very strong, especially when you come from the Soviet Union, from Ukraine, which is very different from the Western world. And Israel was already established, already very Western. So you learn that, first of all, everybody is different. Even within the same town, within the same country, there are different type of people. And every person, I would say, comes with a different manual. And this aspect stayed with me throughout all my career. And when my career went international and started to travel the world and doing business in different continents, I always remember that people are different everywhere. And you have to be sensitive. And you have to find ways how to build alliances, build bridges, and connecting with different cultures in order to eventually find a way to work together.
So building alliances and building bridges and this cultural sensitivity. Later, you joined the Israeli army. So maybe you can tell us a little bit more about this interesting experience and also maybe the takeaways, what you learned there.
Yes, so in Israel, the service in the army is mandatory for everyone, boys and girls, 18 years old and above. I joined the military and I was servicing in a, let's say, educational unit, and my responsibility was to accept new recruits into the Air Force. And the unique thing about my role was that I was accepting new recruits from different, let's say, flavors of the society. And I had, a new recruit who was a father of already around 3 kids. And his wife used to call me to ask him, when is the next time he's going to leave home? He needs his help. Can I release him a bit more frequently? I had people that did not want to serve. I had people that would escape from the service. I had people with social and economical issues. So all the range of the spectrum of people. And that was the major, major challenge in this. And that's where I think I exposed to what leadership actually means, in fact, because leadership, when it comes to professional training, eventually everyone can learn a profession, but it's not enough. In order to achieve your goals, in order to motivate a group of people, you need to find a way how to build the trust with people, how to bring them together, and how to overcome the differences between people. Always be differences, there will be always conflicts, and you need to manage them on a regular basis. You cannot do it once in a while. You have to be there. You have to be part of the people. You have to really understand and have the dialogue on a regular basis.
So communication is very important. Conflict management.
Absolutely.
I would like to dive also into your first venture at a very, very early age. As a young adult, you founded your first venture, and what was your takeaway there? I mean, what did you learn? Also, maybe the motivation behind it.
So, setting up ventures, we know it's a hard work.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Yes, and anyone that will tell you differently probably either did not go through this or came in later in the process. But it's hard work. It requires a lot of patience. It requires a lot of investment, but of course, it also requires people. And I think this is the main topic of what we're discussing, is the people aspect, because you need to have a good people together with you in this venture, people that form together with you the same vision, and people that are also motivated to make it happen. The technology we built, it was in the beginning quite poor, then it evolved, and then it changed, and then we restructured, we went through all of this, but the people changed, and we would not be able to be successful. I would not be able to be successful without the people that joined me in this journey and believed in the idea and were excited about this. It was also, I can say now, it was a social media type of venture. It got a lot of attraction in the Israeli media. So, of course, also the soft element was inherently important in this venture.
So the vision, patience, and investment is important, and, of course, the people who engage in the project. What do you think are some of the personality traits that it takes to be successful as an entrepreneur?
So, when it's a very good question, and there are different ideas. I think if I'm thinking about my ventures and my experience, both in the venture world and the corporate world, I could summarize it to three main criteria or personality traits. One, you have to have a vision. Without a vision, without knowing where you want to reach, you will not be able to reach there. And the difficulty that I find when I'm working with different companies and in my current capacity as well, that sometimes within the day-to-day challenges and the day-to-day issues, people tend to forget about the vision, get discouraged, get hung on different difficulties. And that's why it's not only a slogan, it's a real thing that I really advise to always keep it in mind. Always, it has a meaning why all MBA courses guide you to write your vision down and display it. It's because you always, always have to have it in mind. This is the first thing. The second thing is persistence. Setting up a successful venture, it's a long process. There are ups and downs and successes and failures. And it's, again, easy to get discouraged by the failures or easy to get suddenly rested on the small successes. So the persistence is very important. There are many, many, many stories from the industry. Also Microsoft, they were at the verge of bankruptcy in the first years. But they believed in their idea and they were persistently keep expanding. I heard a very nice analogy recently that a successful entrepreneur said, you always have to be on the offense, always persistent, always keep going, keep pushing and seeking for the next success. The third thing is the resilience. Running a business is not an easy. There are difficulties with people, difficulties financially, cash flow, liquidity, competition, and it's very important that personally you'll be strong enough to absorb it or to go through it until you get out of the situation. So I would summarize this: vision, persistence, and resilience, of course, would be very important.
I would like to talk a little bit about the vision as a leader. I mean, what is the necessity? You mentioned that throughout the operational task, you know, you tend to lose the overall vision. How can a leader communicate this or maintain this vision also for the employees?
There is, I believe, from experience, both on, let's say, growth vision and also, let's say, refocus or restructuring vision, there's one critical element. And this is the open and persistent communication with all the members and the stakeholders. People, when they a bit left outside or not part of the communication, they start to build different theories and thoughts, and they're not sure what, and uncertainties. And this has a material impact on our way and ability to move forward. So even if you're talking about a vision that part of it requires to downsize certain operation or transform it and have people move out of their comfort zones, you have to continuously communicate in person, in writing. You have to be there, you have to be open. And even if there are topics that you cannot share openly, you can say, I cannot share openly, but we are heading into this direction because we need to achieve A, B, and C. And on the growth side as well, it's the same. One of the interesting phenomena that I came across is with successful companies that are looking to, that been doing very good for many years, but the management and the shareholders feel that the market is changing and they have to do something to adapt. Even if their financials are good, they have business, people doing their work. And this kind of companies also come across and struggle implementing and transforming the organizations because people say, why do we need to transform? We've been doing well already for so many years. We'll just keep doing what we are doing. And this is exactly, again, where the place of communication coming in. We tend to communicate a lot within our close circle and the management or project team and leave out many times the rest of the organization. That is very important because the organization is communicating. The programmer is communicating with the project leader and the logistics department is communicating with everyone. So you have to generate this one vision, one language, and you cannot do it without reaching to every single person in your organization.
So communication, very important with the various stakeholder. I just came to my mind like a negative example of a company that maybe became too complacent, like Nokia. I mean, they were, I believe, the market leader, right, in their technology field. And then they completely lost it towards Apple, I think. Was it Apple?
I think they lost to everyone.
To everybody.
to everybody, yes.
So there you can see how fast like a market leader can really change or you know, lose their market share.
I would say, I think it's an extremely good example. When I had my first Nokia, and as many other like products that we have, we think the world would not continue to be a world without these products. Yeah, they can also disappear. But I think it's a good example, because maybe the other part that is important for forming the vision and communicating is also not only communicating one way, but also listening to the organization and aligning the feedback you receive from the organization, from the people in the organization, to the vision. So either you align it to the vision or you enhance the vision. But the vision is a living thing. Okay, you have to have the end result. But what forms the vision is moving components, moving targets. It's very important to listen to organization. In every organization I've worked with or being part of, people have excellent ideas. They know exactly what's going in the market. They have friends, they have colleagues, they're out there, they try, they experiment. They know many times much better than the most brilliant consultant will bring from outside will tell you. An organization missed on this part of listening as well and incorporating the feedback into their vision in order to move forward.
So the vision can also change?
The vision, of course. I think it's very important that the vision would not be some kind of a taboo you are not allowed to talk about on its merits. Part of aligning your organization with the vision is challenging the vision. And if there is a reason or some market event or something new that come out that impacts your vision, you as the management or as the shareholders of the organization, you have the responsibility to react on this and reevaluate yourself. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that listening aspect that you mentioned. Maybe also listening to customers is also quite important if you want to change maybe certain things on the vision side or in other aspects of the organization.
Absolutely, absolutely. I still remember, I think, I wanted to say that with listening to the employees in the organization, listening to your customers, and even to your suppliers, you can save a lot of cost on consultancy. but I also had the experience where we took a very big consultancy company to do exactly this job, to go to the employees and to the customers and to the suppliers and get all the feedback and come back with a new vision. The issue is that the employees kind of said, we paid so much for them to tell you what we tell you all the time.
Please don't mention the name of the organization. Tal, I would like to dive into your transitioning to Switzerland. I mean, you moved here with your family. So what was the rationale of coming to Switzerland?
Of course, the fondue. One experience. But on a serious note, Switzerland is an extremely fascinating environment in the financial industry and technology industry. And it's really an environment where you can build bridges, you can grow business, you can create alliances, you're positioned very well geopolitically and geographically. And I was invited to take over executive board role in a Swiss bank. At the time, we managed around 12 billion of assets under management. Belonged to an Israeli group that I was already engaged with. And I actually did not think twice. I've been already by this time very engaged in different banking institutions, initiatives all around the world. And I really was attracted to the Swiss proposition to build and to grow the business from Switzerland of the wealth management and corporate finance. But this is only was one of the aspects. The second aspect, because of my technological background, there was an opportunity for me actually to bridge between the business and lead the growth of the company, the bank, and the technology transformation that is required to do. And I really like the opportunity to get out of my comfort zone, to do this again, like immigrational or geographical transition as I did in the past. I felt already very comfortable working internationally. And when I arrived and started to get to work, I discovered that the bridging between business and technology on the paper sounds very good. In reality, it's one of the more difficult tasks to, especially within an existing traditional organization.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, because I also see with you, you have this venture, this entrepreneur side in you. You have the technology side in you, and you have also the banking aspect, which is a quite a rare combination, I would say.
Yeah, it's developed organically. If you would ask me, at the age of 15, when I set up my venture back then, what I would do in the future, I would not necessarily say banking, but after my military service, I joined the company, and we pretty much took over the whole financial industry market in Israel with our solutions, which was exactly between business and banking. Then one of the banks invited me to come. And that's how I started to grow and started to go more into the operational business and, of course, technological aspects of a very big universal bank. So it developed organically. I got involved also in different regulatory matters on the resolution side. So got also a very good insight into compliance, risk, and regulation. And when I came to Switzerland, it was the perfect environment for me to bring all of those aspects together and lead the transformation.
Yeah, because Switzerland, I mean, the banking place also it changed quite a bit, the banking industry, because we had more, all of a sudden, more compliance. The banking secrecy wasn't there anymore. Technology changed. So it must have been a huge playing field for you then.
Yes, like it was a bit characterized throughout my career. When I took over new roles and more senior roles, it was never in an era of quietness and everything is working. Always in an era of some disruption. And the same applies also for Switzerland. We have to drive the bank up. We have to change our thinking, our mindset. We have to diversify our business. We have to introduce new technology, clients expecting, partners expecting. There's a tremendous regulatory pressure that is not only, and this is, I think, one of the biggest changes was, it was not only a corporate compliance pressure, as it always been, but it was also a personal liability matter that suddenly executives and people in all the ranks of the organization felt that are exposed. So the organization was in a risk of getting into stagnation. So you have to manage this on a regular basis. You have to manage this event in this very particular period. I don't think it's finished. The industry is still in transformation. It moves out from its traditional space. There are more players coming in to also challenge the traditional industry that is a bit having difficulties to continue to operate as usual.
Now, Tal, you help companies also on a strategic level, also by being a board member. What challenges do the companies have that you work with?
So I think that there are different challenges. Of course, it's very hard these days to make space for you in the market. The competition is very, very intensive. There are rarely really solutions that are really standing out in the classical sense, like novelty. There are great solutions in the market, great deliveries. Everyone has its own uniqueness, but it makes it much more harder for the buyer, especially in B2B, to make a decision and to give the attention to the solution. The other thing is with some companies that I work with is actually the topic that I touched before is getting out of the comfort zone. There are existing projects, existing clients, existing processes. Everything is working. Why to touch it? So I'll give a small example, and this applies both for the provider and also on the buyer of the solution. If you have a let's say an HR process that is manual, there is a form that you need to fill in and then you need to sign and you send, and it's working, so why to automate? Why to spend even time to automate? It's working, you have a form that passes through everyone, no one complained, no form was lost. It's already part of the process. If you want to change it, we need to think about security and segregation of duties and where we are going to store this. So why to change? And this applies, this is a very small example, but it applies on every single business. And like I mentioned, if a business is successful, even more, why to change? The reason to change is because the environment changing. We are today also in a very difficult geopolitical situation. It has an impact on how we do business in the world, with whom we do business in the world. It puts a bit, crystallizes the priorities of organization. There's much more competition. So companies feel the need to change, the need to grow, the need to reach to new markets, the need to change their value proposition, to become more attractive, they need to become more sophisticated. And the biggest difficulty is really aligning the organization and making it happen. Usually from most of the cases I came across, organizations have the skills and the ability to do it, but because they're also so busy with their day-to-day and so used to their existing processes, they find it extremely, extremely difficult.
Also, to implement that change, it's extremely difficult and challenging because people, do you find the decision makers don't see the need, or is it about communicating also the necessity of this new changes?
It's about, I think, mostly addressing this change within the organization as if you would set up a new venture. You need to have a venture inside of your organization that is focus and mindset into the change. You need to have a plan. You need to have a concrete, tangible project plan. You need to have a committee. You need to have change agents that are positive. And also sometimes you need also to change people that as good as they are, but if at some point of time you tried everything to bring them on board, And they will become part of the change. They're still kind of putting sticks in the wheels and hindering the change. Then you also need to think about how to reorganize the organization. So you have to deal it. You have to have a marketing plan. You have to have a communication plan. You have to really go all in into the change. This is also sometimes a barrier because we don't know all the time how change should look like, or what exactly the vision should look like, or are we taking the right bet that we are transforming, for example, from servicing small players to enterprise players? Okay, should I change the organization, or should I build a new organization aside of it? Would I lose my existing business without gaining a new business? So there is, of course, a lot of uncertainties that also makes the decision makers a bit unconfident. But this all, many times I find that it's stuck there instead of tackling this, the core of the issue, discussing should we now recruit a completely new team? Should we transform? Should we change? Should we split? Should we acquire someone? And so forth.
So directly tackling the core problem and the issues is important. Ital, I would like to talk about also finding the right talent for your company. What do you think is important there? How can you find, what is important in finding, looking for the right talent?
I think first of all, I think it's a very, very good question, because especially for growth companies that are looking to build themselves for the future, you need to have very, very skillful people. You need to have talents. You need to have people that think out of the box and that aligned with your interest in missions. And it's difficult because it depends on your stage. Sometimes you just cannot afford Gutans. You need to find different incentives. You need to be excited, exciting. You need to offer some upside. You need to maybe bet your money on that person. But these are the technicalities. The big, big issue is to bring someone that you know is not coming for a short term, is coming to stay. Of course, and if you would ask a candidate, would never say that he's coming just for 1-2 years to get experience or to bridge or eventually to get the job that he really wants. So first of all, you need to really assess and ensure that the person is aligned with you, wants to join, wants to become part of the company. The second thing, of course, you need to assess the skills, because one of the, and Jakob, I'm sure that you are like fully familiar with it, is that when you're building a team, you cannot have all the people being the same people, okay? I think one quote I remember, I don't remember quotes from movies usually, I remember one quote from the Big Bang Theory that one of the characters said that if the whole world was like him, the world would not survive, even though they're all very smart people. So you have to build a diversity. You need to bring someone that supplements you and your team. And I think this is a very big challenge because you sometimes don't know exactly what does it mean to supplement you. You need to first recognize about yourself and your team. Because it's we're also tending to bring people like us.
Yeah.
So I think this dissonance is very difficult. You need to first of all assess it and then later on you need to act on this and decide that, yeah, you're bringing someone different than you that would supplement and would bring the skills that you need. And the third thing is, it's hard to find available talent in the market. And there are different approaches to this. Many talents grow from when they just finish their studies, for example. So they join a company as very young people and they're building and acquiring the knowledge and the talent together with the company. Not everyone can afford this very long journey. The other possibility is to hunt for an existing talent, but if they are doing good in their existing organization, they're not always willing to change. There are opportunities of the organization going through a transformation. If the person is the kind of is looking a bit for a different challenge, there are opportunities. But if someone is really a talent, doing good, it's very hard to attract. So I think the challenge to summarize is to find the right person that would supplement you and will be willing to make the change.
Mm-hmm. So a good assessment of the skills and then also somebody who is different to you, who complements you in what you're maybe not so good at or you don't even like to do. How do you retain talent if you're not such a big player like Microsoft, Google, or Apple and cannot afford these huge salaries? So what is a good way maybe for a growth company or let's say medium-sized companies to get people maybe engaged or just make them passionate about just stay, you know, and not leave.
When I transitioned to Switzerland, I think even before I entered my office, I was still in all the paperwork and the arrangements and so forth. I already got a call from my CEO to be saying, hey, this and that person just resigned. And this person was one of the biggest talents in the bank. And I recognized it because I kind of met the people before I accepted the role. Met the people, I got to know them, I heard. So I recognized it is would be a very big loss to the company. So that was my first challenge, actually, to retain a great person. And what I learned is that we managed to work together and managed to retain him for many years to come afterwards. What I managed is that talents are smart people, and And if they recognize the talent, they also want to be appreciated. It doesn't have to be monetary appreciation. They want to be part of the organization. They want to have an influence. They want to be heard. You know, they're doing such a great work. They have such a great insight. So I think it comes to A, communication and listening, two-way communication, of course. And listening and receiving the message and incorporating, it relates to bringing the business to the talent and bringing the talent to the business to integrate. So integrating between the people, and of course also talents, retaining great talent requires also some means to compensate. If it's not now, later. I found that compensation actually rarely translates to money. I found that people have different motives, different interests. Some are looking for great talents to have the ability to spend more time with the family. Some are looking to get a possibility for further education. Some look to a bit have a possibility to network. It doesn't have to be always salaries. And I think many organizations a bit refrain from searching for talents because they're afraid they would need to now spend a lot of money, and it's a risk. They don't know if they will be successful or not. But I found success in other things that actually were much more valuable because, A, the people understood that they're heard. We know what is important for them. And they understood, and actually we are making an effort and an attempt to match the expectation to build an environment that is positive and favorable, not only to the great talents, but for every employee in the organization.
So it's not always about the money, it's about the appreciation of the employees, being heard, creating a positive environment for all the employees, and making the effort. And of course, listening and communication.
Yeah, it's relationship.
Yeah, relationship.
It's a pure form of managing relationships.
Managing relationships. Tal, I would like to know your perspective on corporate culture. Maybe you can elaborate a little bit about that. How do you create actively, or can you create a corporate culture?
It's a difficult question to answer. Of course, it depends on dozens of variables. How long the organization, how long are the people there, what are the values and the culture of the leadership layer. And I think corporate culture is also a derivative of the vision of the organization. You can have the greatest vision, but if your leadership team is, continuously, challenging each other, not in a positive manner, it's very hard to build some uniformity. Corporate culture is a very delicate matter because, as we talked in the beginning, people are very different, and the challenge here is to find a tangible way to develop a corporate culture. And a tangible way means you need to transform your thoughts of how you wish to, what kind of culture you wish to have, to actual action. So it starts from the smallest things. If you want people to come up with ideas, you have to build an environment and drive them to give ideas, and not on the kind of very, very superficial layer. Yeah, you have to show, of course, personal example. I think maybe this is the most important thing. Every member of the leadership team or every person within the organization with an influence, that people are looking at him because he's so many years in the organization, or because he's so professional, or because he's so senior, or because he's so funny, it doesn't matter why, but you need to drive those people to show a personal example of if you want the culture of information sharing, if you want the culture of proactiveness, of opportunity seeking, of building projects together, it's very easy in organization to get siloed. Mm-hmm. Each department works independently. So I think it starts and ends with personal example. And of course, fairness. You know, you cannot, if you don't show personal example, it's very hard to demand other people to act differently. So, and this personal example starts from the top, goes to the very, very bottom. And I remember discussions also with different people within my different stages of my career, where they say, but who cares? Who am I? Why do I need now, like, you know, to come in, not to listen to whatever full volume music in the office? Like, who cares? No one hears it. But people do care. People look, people always compare relativeness, where they are vis-a-vis others. If others do more or less than they are, it's normal. So it also comes to communication, comes to concrete project plan and definition of what we want to achieve, and showing a personal example.
So it can be big things, but also small things, the way people act, communicate with each other. So also in a very detailed behavior.
How many times probably all of us walk through some open space floor or an office or a meeting room where someone is like having a scream competition with the other because of something that did not work or something that failed, or a manager that educating his employee in front of others. So you need to be also, as a driver, as a change of corporate culture, you need to be a proactive agent. You see something, you address it on the spot. You don't like make a note to yourself. You really see something happening, you take the situation aside, you isolate it, you deal with it in order to start building and changing the corporate culture, whatever the corporate culture we want it to be.
And the culture can also change over the months and years, right? It's not always staying the same.
Yeah, we just experienced it a few years ago when we entered into a pandemic era.
Yeah, I remember.
where the corporate culture in many, many companies changed overnight. Overnight.
Nice. Yep.
And we are still dealing with it and trying to see how do we bridge between the need of people to come to the office and also the very good explanation why people also can do some remote work.
Absolutely. And now, Tal, we live in a world with huge change in technology. For example, artificial intelligence is going to change our lives, professional and personal lives. Now, you have children, you and your wife, and if your children, when they come to you and say, Dad, which professional path should I pursue? What would you advise them in these times of change?
Thank you. Yeah, my children, Urit and Eden, they're very, very young yet. Mm. But of course, the day my wife, Judith, delivered them, we immediately started to plan their career path. So I think they got introduced to like a very cute doctor kit very early in their life. But it's a good question. I think when it comes to artificial intelligence, I don't see it necessarily as a technology that would replace. Of course, some jobs it would replace. It would make it easier. But some other jobs, it would just accelerate the ability to deliver. And would increase actually the delivery capacity. Even if I take a traditional profession like a lawyer, that is one of the professions I allocate for my daughters. I believe lawyers would not be replaced, but they would have much more sophisticated means to do a good job. It's very much similar to when the tractors were introduced. There was probably a farmer somewhere that a sales agent came to him and say, hey, I have something for you that would allow you to produce exactly the same produce, but only within half a day instead of a week. So the rest of the time you could rest. Mm-hmm. Of course, this is not what happened. He bought the tractor and he worked just much more and produced much more produce.
More output.
More output. So, yeah, I think in the times of artificial intelligence, there is still a very big space for interpersonal professions that require human judgment call, and the legal profession is one of them, just as an example. Medical professions are also one of them. Of course, being part of the technology and the digital world would allow you, this kind of technology would allow you to build more sophisticated solutions. So I also see it as a very good profession for the future.
Very good. Now, as the last question, Tal, this is more goes into self-reflection. So I'm quite curious what you're going to answer here. What do you think is your superpower? In which field do you think you're a little bit better than other people?
Thank you for the question. I did not really... Yeah, I was prepared for it, honestly, but yeah.
Well, I have a feeling maybe what it could be, but I'll let you answer it first.
you don't want to kind of indicate it maybe?
Well, I mean, I think like with your background and your story, I think definitely resilience, like your ability to change and adapt, flexibility, I think is definitely can be a strong point, I would assume. And also your ability to adapt to new situations, maybe that could be something. But also stress level, maybe high stress level. You can, take high levels of stress, I assume.
That's very kind of you.
I mean, that's my assumption, yeah.
Yeah, I did not know I could mention multiple superpowers. Now that I know, I hope we have a bit more time. Mm-hmm. I have a long list. I'm joking.
Yeah, maybe. emotional intelligence. So maybe you can read people very well, or you can assess people well, and in certain situations, empathize with people.
I think I do relate to many of the topics that you mentioned. Looking all the changes and all the jurisdictions, the type of corporations I worked with. As I mentioned, I always got promoted into very disruptive, difficult situations. And you have to find a way how to maneuver within. And to maneuver, it means to have resilience and to be able to communicate with people and find a way to work together. And, of course, flexibility and agility, I think it's very important. Especially in today's world that everything changes so fast, and one day everything is great, the next day there is a certain threat in the organization or something else that comes up, and you have to be like to approach it in a sensible manner. And I'm happy to say that the last transition I did is really to join a very great group called Edge Capital Ventures, where we are taking everything that I mentioned before and the difficulties in traditional financial industry, we created an alternative platform within the finance sphere, an alternative fixed income, to address some of the difficulties that banks experience when it comes to corporate finance and fixed income products. And it was also a new venture that we had to restructure and form it in a new way, and to build the team and to build the clientele and to build the investors. And we're doing it already for a while, and quite successful.
Yeah, very exciting. Tal Jampolsky, thank you so much for this wonderful talk. I wish you and your family all the success and nothing less. And hope to see you soon.
Thank you very much, Jakob, for having me.
Thank you very much.
People, potential, technology.